Mr. Winkler.
What a pleasure to see you, gentlemen.
How you doing? So this is my friend Lee. This is my assistant.
Hi, Lee.
Hello, how are you?
This is my friend Maisie.
Hey, Maisie.
The dog, nice. What kind of dog is it?
It is a golden doodle.
I have one I'm dog sitting for right now. They're great dogs.
Aren't they lovely? They're warm and lovely. And her name is Maisie.
Nice. Maisie.
She's almost two.
It's a puppy I'm dog sitting for.
He's only doing it because he's talking to this girl that he likes and he's trying to get in good with her.
Isn't that why we do everything?
That's a great reason to do it.
Man, Henry.
Hi.
Thank you so much for doing this, man. You're the most legendary person we've had on so far.
Well, let me just say thank you for 5 great years of MacGyver. Your character was so alive with spirit and warmth and humanity, and I'm so happy to be here with you.
Man, I don't know if you're... First of all, thank you very much for saying that. That means a lot coming from you. And I don't know if you remember this. The first time I ever met you, I was actually doing press for Rush Hour.
Was it in Philadelphia?
It was in Philadelphia.
At a station, at a local news station.
That's amazing that you remember that.
And you were running in the hall. You said, hey, I got this new show. And then boom.
It got canceled during the commercial break. And right after it got canceled, I
did a Broadway play in 1972, my first Broadway play. I had the lead. It was amazing. It closed so fast. I was taking off my makeup. They were ripping out the sink.
Oh no!
I understand that.
That's the thing, and that's why I wanted you to be on this, because you know I named it Urban Legends Podcast because I wanted to create a platform where I have conversations with people I consider living legends and people that made legendary moves in their career and making legendary moves in their career. And I mean, your resume alone speaks volumes, you know, to you. And this is something else I was going to say about you, how nice you are. Like, you are everyone talks about, like, you and Tom Hanks. Y'all are like the two people that everybody always say are like the nicest human beings. And it's every time I've had encounters with you, met you, you've been nothing but gracious, nothing but nice and warm, you know, to me. So I just want to say thank you for being that way.
You bet. I'll tell you something, though. I don't think about it. I don't think about being nice. I just think we're all on this earth together. You have a dream, and you are an actor. Now you're a podcaster. You're a musician. You're a writer.
That's right.
And, you know, you're going down all these paths to get where you want. That's all I did. I was lying in bed in New York City on the West Side, dreaming about being an actor and thinking every day, how am I gonna do this? I'm dyslexic, I'm bad at school. Everybody says I'm gonna fail. How am I gonna make it? And you know what? You find your power and you find your way.
Absolutely. So what even got you interested in acting? What sparked that bug in you?
You know what? I don't know. I honestly don't know. It wasn't like I stopped to think, oh, what would I like to do? Maybe I'll be a fireman. I love firemen. Maybe I'll be a scientist. I didn't do well in math.
Me either.
Science. It hit me all at once, and I had no plan B. It was either this or I don't know what, or I would disintegrate in a corner.
Well, I've heard a lot of famous celebrities say that, you know, when you go into this, you can't have a plan B. You know, I've heard Keenan Ivory Wayne say that when he got into comedy, you know, when he moved.
I met him at the beginning of his career. He came in with a script called The 5 Heartbeats.
Ooh, that's crazy. That's crazy.
I'm telling you. Now, he's one of those guys that when you're in his presence, you know. You know there is greatness inside that body.
For sure. I mean, he created one of the most legendary TV shows of all time, in Living Color, and worked very closely with Robert Townsend.
Robert Townsend was in that meeting.
Yeah, yeah. Man, that's a classic movie. Anybody that hasn't seen it, The Five Heartbeats. That movie's so good. It's about musicians coming together and coming up, and like a Temptations type movie almost. It was so good. I thought they were a real group.
Right.
So what made him have a meeting with you? Were they trying to get you to produce it? Were they trying to get you to be in it?
In the beginning, they were trying to get us to produce it. And the deal I had, the people who supported my deal were not interested. They wanted action adventure.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Gotcha.
So, but I'm telling you, from the minute the other person that I met like that was, you know, and then his son is, and then his grandsons.
Right.
Right. No. I mean, it just,
it's a million Wayne's family members.
Oh my God. It just is in the DNA or something. But when I first met him, it was the same thing as Robin Williams.
Oh, wow.
When Robin came and auditioned for Happy Days, he opened his mouth within 30 seconds. I knew my job was to just stand aside, say my line, and not try and disrupt his lane. Because this was a man of other proportions.
Well, that speaks volume about your lack of ego. Because there's a lot of actors that could have seen that and been intimidated. I did a film one time, and the star, he saw the humor coming from me. And instead of letting me kind of go, he wanted to kind of bring it down. So, and he actually took one of my lines actually and used it in the film. So the fact that you were able to say, you know what, I'm gonna let him shine. He know what he's doing. I mean, that speaks volumes of your character.
Well, because look, it doesn't take away from me. I look at what happened. I'm still having a great time. But you understand. And I'll tell you, if that happens to you again, this is the way I see my life. You know that toy that you punch and it goes down and then it comes right back to center?
Absolutely.
You blow it up. It's got sand at the bottom. That's the way I see my life. I get knocked over, I come right back to center, and I keep moving to where I need to be.
Now, how long did it take you to get to that mindset? Yeah, absolutely.
When you were in that movie, where is that guy now?
I mean, he's been kind of missing. I literally just read on Deadline yesterday he has a new project coming out. But he kind of went MIA for a while.
Right. And he will go MIA again.
Right.
Because that... the job we do as actors is we are an ensemble, and there can be no missing link. If we don't come together, the project, the audience will, it'll be like sand in their eye.
You know, that's actually something I was going to ask you, which was the importance of relationships. How do you feel like you're building relationships with peers and coworkers have helped sustain your career and kept you going in this industry?
You know, I had some relationships. There are relationships. When I was younger, I was very naive. So we would finish a project, I would make a movie, and I would think, I just spent like 6 months, 3 months, 4 months with this person. We're gonna go to dinner. we're pals. Right. And then I would call, and I'm still waiting for them to call me back.
Man, so I know the feeling.
All right, so I had to learn that I don't depend on that. My friends, one is a psychiatrist, one was in baseball, one is a musician, and I don't have to depend on anybody or think I need to be friends with that person because they're famous. I did it. We had a great time. We move on, and all you worry about is that you exist, and you exist in a world where you can get up every morning, look in the mirror, and go, okay, everything is just dandy.
Right. No, man, those are wise words you just spoke. I mean, I used to tell people prior to MacGyver, I used to always do shows, you know, your friends on set, and then once the show's over, you never speak to these people, you never speak to these people again. You know, and people are always asking, like, do you still hang out? I'm like, no, I don't see these people. I don't know where they, where the hell they at. So MacGyver, I feel like we kind of have a little closer bond because we went through so much together. I don't know how long it's going to last, you know, but...
You know what? You'll see.
Yeah.
You know? And then you'll see. I reach out. I'm not getting the feeling that these people are reaching out. Absolutely. I'm the only one who's reaching out. And then eventually, but you'll see. You'll see who sticks.
Now, see, it makes me feel good that, for you to say this because, you know, I'm someone like that too. I'll reach out to people, you know, people don't reply back sometimes or they'll read it and don't say nothing. And it's like, I thought we were cool. You know, it's like, I thought we had some type of relationship.
You know what? You are cool. Here's the problem. We are performers. There is a certain part of our being that is self-centered. Mm. And some are much more than others. Mm. Some don't have room because they're afraid if I let you in, I'm losing something for myself.
Hmm.
As opposed to it enriches myself.
Absolutely. Man, I'm telling you, these are conversations. I wish you was my therapist. These are conversations that I have like with my parents and my wife and my friends. Like we talk about this stuff, but hearing you say that, it kind of like validates some of the thinking that I was having about certain people that I encounter with. So let me ask you this question, because I want to know, how do you handle, so like when MacGyver got canceled, you know, how do they tell you deliver that information to somebody of your status and stature?
No difference. It is a cold business. And you get a feeling, you have to mourn because what a great job. You know, you were on the set. I was only there twice, but I was in the editing room. Peter Lenkoff and Monica Mercer both let me into the editing room. So I watched you over the 5 years grow. I watched everybody grow. And you just have to be so grateful that you had this moment, that you had this time. And now your job, my acting teacher said to me, your job is to get the job. Once you get the job, you'll figure out how to do it.
Absolutely.
So they tell you, you know, and it hurts. And you think, oh man, I thought we were just cooking, just starting. I was told it was financial, that, you know, it was just too much money. It will be replaced maybe by a reality show because that's the money of the world right now in making TV, especially for the networks.
Right.
The networks, you know, I will tell you, if your audience is interested, AT&T bought Warner Brothers and everything that went with it. That was HBO, HBO Max, Discovery. CNN is in there. They were going to spend $6 billion on entertainment for this coming year. Netflix was going to spend $16 billion on entertainment this year. AT&T said, we can't compete. I don't know what I'm doing. We're out. And they just sold Warner Brothers to an affiliate of theirs, which is Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So now Discovery owns the Warner's family.
Wow.
That's just one little tiny explosion that happened out of the pandemic.
That's crazy. And I didn't even know Discovery had that much money. When I heard about it, I was like, I didn't even know they were big enough to buy. I would think just Warner Brothers would be bigger than them financially.
You would think so. Now, here's the thing. Every show you see on Discovery is in every country. They sold the franchise of flipping a house, buying a house, buying a pan, frying a pan, right, looking in the mirror, being in the mirror. They sold every one of those shows
right
to every country, you know, like France, Luxembourg. They're flipping houses all over the place in Luxembourg.
You know, that's when I realized the real business of like international. I always knew that international was important, and that's really what these networks care about, is them being able to make their money, because they make their real money overseas, is what I've always been told. But I remember I was pitching a show to CBS, and we were actually in the midst of developing it. And the first thing the dude at head of production said to me was like, "Oh, this is great. We could sell this overseas. We could sell it to different territories." You know, so I mean, that's anybody that's really interested into that type of thing, man. That's real key gems that we just put out there for you to keep be mindful of when you're developing and coming up with show ideas and concepts.
You bet. You know, the truth of the matter is, television exists for only one reason. It is a magnet for your eyeballs to see the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And now there is TiVo, which is killing them.
Yeah.
So now they put the product in the show. Now everybody is drinking Coca-Cola, or they are using an appliance from a particular company, or they're driving a car.
Right.
Television exists for one reason only: to bring you commercials.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I heard someone say that a long time ago. That was like, the whole reason we're doing this TV show is to sell soap. And I was like, oh. I was like, yeah, man. So I want to talk about, you know, before, I want to ask you this question, because I don't know this. How did, when I first landed MacGyver, I saw that you were executive producer, and then I did my homework and I saw you as an executive producer on the original MacGyver. So I want to know the story about how did you even come on board on the original MacGyver? How did you find out about it?
So part of the way that ABC paid me toward the 9th and 10th year of Happy Days was they gave me a production company. Mm. So I had an office at Paramount, which was the studio. The studios were independent of the network at that time. So it was ABC and Paramount. I had an office at Paramount. I had a secretary, and I was able to hire a human being to develop shows for my company.
Nice.
So it was on the air, which is almost non-existent now. So that means if I bring them a show and they like it, it goes right on the air.
Wow.
And the very first show I brought them was an international fix-it guy. You can't go to the police. You can't go to the army. You can't go to the fire department. Who do you call? You call MacGyver. And it was, they said yes, and it ran for 7 years.
That's crazy.
It was amazing. We would shoot the show with Richard Dean Anderson. You know, we had two great MacGyvers, Lucas and Richard Dean.
Absolutely.
Richard Dean, when we were looking for the original, walked in. He was so handsome. There must be 15 or 20 guys that are ugly because he got it all.
Right.
So now this, you know, everybody walked in and got a big belt buckle, and they're just dripping like, you know, I'm a star. And then Richard Dean walked in and he rummaged around for his glasses so he could read the script. And just that imperfection, he got the part. And then he was an unbelievable team member. He really was. He would do anything to make the show better. Mm. You know, like Lucas. And then, so we were on for, we did 127 episodes, maybe.
Wow.
In the first run. And then 5 years later, they had three producers who tried to get MacGyver back. Two of them failed. Peter Lenkoff got it on the air. And I met with him for lunch. And then I was invited to edit the performances for 5 years. And it was just thrilling to watch all of you actors get better and better and better. The relationships got stronger and stronger.
Hey, you know, shout out to Peter Lenkoff. I always tell him, you know, he gave me the job, you know. So you know, I'm always thankful, you know, and appreciative to him for that. For, you know, he called me in. I think CBS had recommended me because I had just came off of Rush Hour. And, you know, he met with me and we had a good meeting. And, you know, right after I left the meeting, I basically got the offer to do MacGyver. So, and something else that you said that, which is true. I grew so much as an actor doing that show. You know, I'm a comedian through and through. So, you know, I come on the show, I'm loud, hey, everybody, you know, and then I get on the show and everybody's whispering. And I was like, oh, I guess I got to break it down. Oh, you want me to talk like a regular person, like a human being? Okay.
Yeah, but Justin, here's the thing. You knew that. You saw that. You were open enough to absorb that. That's what being great is.
Wow.
And then in the last season, your relationship, was it with your mom?
I love that.
All right. So could you have done that in the first year?
No.
But look, just look at what you took in and what you understood. That's the real mark of an actor or somebody who is sitting in Idaho and wants to be one.
Right. Absolutely. So tell me about your training. I want to talk about, like, I saw you went to Yale School of Drama.
Yes.
You know, how did you get in? What did you learn being in that school?
So there are a few things. I'm dyslexic, but I mean severely dyslexic. So I'm in the bottom 3% academically in America, and that is qualified. That's not like I'm just joking. I was told I would never achieve. I wanted to be an actor, as I said. So I thought, how do I do this? And I don't want to be a flash in the pan. You know, so many actors are like that magic paper you light on fire and then it's gone. I don't want to do that. I wanted to be the long haul. So training was very important. Mm. Acting is 5,000 years old. So there are rules. So I went to Emerson College in Boston and I studied theater and psychology. Wow. Then
that's a great mix.
I don't know how I did it, but I got into the Yale School of Drama. And they break you down and then they build you back up. So movement, voice, theory, just the idea that when you're playing a character, that character has a reason to exist. Your job is to find out what's that reason. Why? And everything you do feeds into the reason your character exists.
Mm.
What do people say about you? What does the writer write about you? How do you feel about those everybody in that room? You must have a different feeling when you look at them, every one of them, and you let all of that come out, and all of a sudden, your human being starts to get fuller.
Mm.
That's what I think training is. It allows you to go through that process.
Wow, man, that's amazing. You just broke that down that way. When you first started acting, so when you went through the training,
yes,
were you doing gigs in New York first? Did you move to LA after you graduated? What was your next steps?
I was scared to move to LA. I tried out for Broadway. I didn't get it until 1972. I got a Broadway play that opened and closed, as I said. Mm-hmm. Then years later, I did a play that ran for 9 months.
Okay.
Years later, I did a play that ran for 7 days. And my dream is to win a Tony.
Nice.
That is my dream. It is on my mind all the time because I truly believe if you will it, it is not a dream. If you have it and it is, and there's no ambivalence in your brain, you can make it happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was going to ask you, like, what else do you want to accomplish? Because you've done so many things. But, I mean, it's great to know that, you know, that you're still striving for something and yeah. will achieve it.
See, our children's book, I am, as I said, the bottom of the class. And with my partner, we have written 36 novels for children. Now, I would never think I could do that. You just try. You don't know what you can do until you try. And this new one comes out October 5th.
Nice.
It's about an alien who has to leave his planet, which is oppressive. He comes down and lands on the only address he knows on Earth, which is the back lot of Universal Studios.
Nice.
Who's going to complain about a rocket ship on the back lot of a studio? And, you know, what I realize is that every character that my partner and I write is about the kid just on the outside looking in. I want to be over there. How do I get in over there? I'm just on the outside. So he is a cobalt blue alien.
Nice.
And he figures out how to get on a sitcom to play an alien because he's already got the costume.
Can't beat him. You can't. It's authentic. He's the alien. It's called Alien Superstar, everybody. So y'all make sure y'all pick that up when that comes out.
That's what I want to do. This is what I want to do. I want to work until I can't. I want to be a great a husband and a father and a grandfather until I can't. And I want to fly fish until I can't.
Nice. All right, so what was it? Because I would be crazy to not bring up Happy Days while I have you here.
Sure.
What was that like? The process, like, where were you at in your acting journey prior to landing Happy Days?
Okay, so I just finished The Lords of Flatbush with Sly Stallone.
Nice.
I made it for a year, 12 months. For $2,000. That's what I was paid. But it was a great experience. I did commercials. I worked in front of a camera and I sold coffee or American Airlines or toothpaste. Shine your teeth. Made enough money to come to California for 1 month.
For pilot season?
Pilot season. And during that month, I went to a brand new show. They were auditioning at Paramount Studios. And all I did was I made the decision to change my voice. That's all I did. And so I went from Henry and I started talking like this. All right, hey, look, you're going to read with me. Don't get too close. And the changing of my voice unlocked my imagination, and I was on fire. I read the script, I threw it up in the air, I sauntered out of the room, and at the end of my $1,000, when I had to fly back to New York, they called and said, would you like to play this character? And I said, when he takes his jacket off, who does he have to be cool for? When he's in his apartment, if you let me show the emotional side to this guy, it will be my pleasure. Now, where I got the nerve to talk to this producer like that, I don't know. He said yes, I said yes, and for the next 10 years, I went, hey.
Man, that's amazing. So, okay, well, when that character took off, what was it an immediate, like, soon as you came on, like, the character immediately, like, took off? Could you see, like, my life is changing immediately, like, once you came on the air with that character?
It was unbelievable. So, we're on stage 19. We now here talk about a circle. Stage 19, Paramount, 10 years, three cameras shooting Happy Days. 2 years ago, the end of season 2 of Barry on HBO,
which I want to get to.
The last scene I do is on stage 19 on Paramount lot. So I got the Fonz when I was 27, and I got Gene Cousineau on Barry when I was 72. Just flip the numbers. So now I'm doing it, and of course you don't know. You don't know what's happening in the world. You're just on this soundproof stage. You're doing the best you can. You're trying to be funny. You're trying to tell the story. I got $1,000 to fly to Little Rock, Arkansas for the newspaper down there. I think it was called The Constitution. And I was going to sign autographs at the mall and sponsored by the newspaper. We shoot the show, we shoot Happy Days, Friday night, 7 o'clock. It was in front of a live audience. Finished at about 11. Got to the airport, got on the plane, got to Little Rock, Arkansas about 4 in the morning. I'm about to get off the plane and there are a whole bunch of people. And I said to the stewardess, there's a party going on. How do I go around them? I don't want to mess up their party. Mm-hmm. He said, I think they're here for you. Wow. 3,000 people in 50s garb, in poodle skirts and leather jackets were there to greet me when I got off that plane. Now I'm surrounded by police walking through the mob. And at that time, the girls wore strawberry lipstick. And the smell of that strawberry lipstick hung in your nose for weeks. And thousands of people showed up at the mall. That's how I knew we must be doing something right.
Now, I want to let you know something. When I get off the plane, there's one person to greet me to tell me to get back on the plane and get out of the city. So that's amazing. Continue. I'm listening.
Okay. So now, all four boys, we go on a press tour. Potsy, Ralph, Richie, and the Fonz. Okay. Ron Howard, Don Most, Anson Williams, and me. We go to Dallas. Can I curse on your... On
absolutely. Your... See, yeah. I didn't cuss because it was you. I cuss all the time all on, right, this, right. On this podcast.
Part of the story. Yeah. So we're in Dallas. 25,000 people come to say hello to us at Neiman Marcus, at the department store, which is how, you know, in Dallas. Now there is a group of 25,000 people in front of us, and our limousine is on the other side of them. Don Most gets a little nervous in crowds. Ron doesn't quite know what's happening. Anson says, what are we going to do? And I did this. Honest to God, it just came to me. All right, listen up. You're going to part like the Red Sea. And we're going to walk through you. And there are four of us and a lot of you. You're not going to touch us. They backed up and built a corridor. Wow. Now we're walking. And the guy, and somebody yells out, hey, the Fonz is short. I went, hey, fuck you. I'm not short. They went, oh, he's so cool. I went, now you got it. We got in the limousine and took off. And that is, word for word, an actual story. that is just like, it was amazing.
Man, that is amazing. That's an amazing story. Have you written a book yet about your life, your biography yet?
No, I didn't. I wrote a book that was supposed to start off. It's called, well, you know, because I love to fly fish for trout.
Okay. Right. I've never met an idiot on the river. Straight up. Shout out to that.
That's what it's called. It started off as a book of photographs that I took while
amazing
being on the river.
That's
and
nice. That's
out
beautiful.
Of that came, I wrote everything that I learned from the Zen of fly fishing, because it's really, you can't concentrate on anything else but that fish. And then, so that's the only book. And
because I'm sure you have so many other stories and tales about this is okay. This is I think two other questions about Happy Days.
Sure.
Which is one, were you married or did you have a girlfriend around that time? Because I want to know, how did you deal with women during that time period?
You have there are lots of ladies want to be with you because you're on television.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts your feelings because eventually you find out they don't care about the you. They care about the perceived you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very careful and you have to use your instinct. You have to really not use your brain, not use other parts of your anatomy. You have to, well, sometimes you can, but you have to use
straight up.
You have to use your instinct. And you have to know this person is authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be fun to spend time with her. And if we don't get along as human beings, that's a different story.
Right.
But it was, there were women who wanted me to sign certain parts of their anatomy that are above their belly button.
Hey, shout out to that.
So, and now I...
You know what I'm saying? Now,
I can't do that.
Right.
Because I'm afraid, because I'm a short, worried Jew, I'm afraid that the ink is going to get into their bloodstream. So I don't do it, but the view is nice.
Right.
Then, you're sleeping in a hotel. There's a knock at the door at 3:00 in the morning. You open it up. Is it a really attractive woman? Am I disturbing you? I said, no, I was just writing the Magna Carta out from memory. You know, you're not disturbing me.
Right.
But thank you very much, because you don't know what their intention is. You don't know how close the lawyer is.
Hmm.
So it's a little insulated. You have to insulate yourself. You have to be very careful. You really do. And I'm not saying all people are like that.
Right.
But when you're on television, it's more people approach you like that than in normal life.
No, absolutely. Well, that's good.
What about you? What about you?
When it comes to women?
Yeah.
Man, you know, it's crazy. I'm going to tell you, the most I ever got it was when I was doing Rush Hour. Because when you number one on the call sheet, you start on Rush Hour, you know, I felt feminine energy coming towards me from everyone. I mean, every woman that was, I'm talking about from wardrobe department to coworkers, guest stars, everybody, I felt it. Fortunately for them, I was married, but even more so fortunately for them, I was so busy filming 15 hours every day. Yeah. I couldn't do nothing anyways. But I think you definitely have, you know, two different types of people. You have the people that's like super cautious, like I don't know what's gonna happen if I mess with this person. And then you have the other people that's just like, you know, fuck it, I'm gonna go out and have my fun. You know, so you know, and that's something I talked to my wife about. And I mean, just being an honest, like, male, alpha male with sexual energy, you know, I have to make sure I tame myself so I'm not going out and about doing all of that type of thing, because men, we're not accustomed to having women approach us. That's not a normal thing. Until you get some type of success, money, power, you start having women do stuff like that.
Right. And it's not always authentic. But you said something very interesting on another subject. I was so busy filming 15 hours a day. People think that when you're on television, or if you obtain a certain amount of success, you've got life made. It is, first of all, I'm grateful for the job.
Right.
It is, but it's a job. And it is a job. Excuse me, I just burped.
Hey, man, do you?
It is a job that not a lot of people can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely. Mentally and physically.
Mentally and physically, because the camera never lies. And at the 15th hour, you have to be as fresh as the first hour. And it's quite something. Now, the stuff that comes with it is certainly wonderful. We make a good living when we're working, but it's a tough job.
Yeah, it is. I tried to explain that. So even when they offered me MacGyver, I took it because I was like, what? I'm number 5 on the call sheet? Absolutely. Because from rush hour, being number 1, you in every scene, you work in 13 to 15 hours every day. It literally took me a full year to get all of my energy back as just
I totally understand that.
Yeah. So here's my last question about MacGyver specifically is, not MacGyver, Happy Day specifically, is did you face any resentment from other cast members because of your success?
You know, that is always going to happen. But here's the thing. You know who you are. And somebody phrased it this way. I had an incredible, in the fourth year, we went to a dude ranch. Happy Days was on a dude ranch and I rode a bull.
Nice.
Fonz rode a bull. And I'm riding back with Ron Howard. And, you know, this is documented. And where he has a VW Bug, not the modern Bug, the original Bug. We're driving back to the Los Angeles from the dude ranch. And I said, so now we're 4 years in, Ron. We're friends. We work really well together. How do you feel? He said, well, to tell you the truth, look, I was the star of the show. I was number 1 on the call sheet. And your character just keeps taking off. But I know that you're not doing anything to make it that way except being a good actor. You're not throwing your weight around and trying to usurp me. You're just being doing your job. And we never talked about it again. But now other actors, yes, there was resentment. But you can't let that get in your head. You can't think, oh, how am I going to make that right? You just, hey, I'm just doing what I'm doing. I'm loving what I'm doing. And then I get 50,000 letters a week.
Crazy. Yeah, man, because I've dealt with that on other shows, you know, and people don't realize this. As an actor, there's something like a call, what he just mentioned, a call sheet. Number 1, number 2, it kind of lets you know, like, who's the most, quote-unquote, valued or important person out of the cast, go on down. And I remember I was on a show, and there was another cast member upset because I was number 1. You know, and it was a real type of power struggle thing that he was trying to implement. But it really just shows the other person's insecurity.
How did you handle it?
Man, you know, I just told him, yo, this is team. We're a team. You know, yeah, I'm like, I'm number 1 on the call sheet, but literally because I'm talking more. I'm literally talking more. That's why I'm number one on the call sheet. But I'm like, this is a team effort. And whether I do well, you do well, like, we should all root for each other because your success is my success.
How did he take that?
He thought I was just talking bullshit, meaning I think you probably have this problem too. We're genuinely nice people, right? Yeah. We're good for the sake of being good.
Right. It's just who we are.
That's just who we are. There are people that think it's all bullshit, right? There's going to be people that think, oh, he's just being nice because it looks good. He's not really this way. And I think that's what he was thinking. Anytime that I would say something positive or, you know, encouraging, I think he thought I was just saying it to look good. I didn't really mean it.
Okay, so how did he get in your head?
Nah, man. He tried, though. You know, he tried to get in my head. He would do stuff and all types of things like that. But, you know, I was so... determined to for the show to be successful, for me to be successful, that I couldn't allow any outside interference to impede on that.
Once again, you just said a word that is vital, determined. I live by two words, tenacity and gratitude.
Mm.
And it seems that you understand that innately. You were determined that the show was the main thing.
Right.
That was your main focus. That, I'll tell you, that takes a lot of strength on your part. It takes a lot of strength. There are people who would be just undone by somebody's with that kind of energy.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. So, you know, and when you ask, like, where's that person now, when you asked about the other person, this particular person I'm mentioning, he's definitely MIA. You know, he's nowhere to be found at the moment. So, Trey, I got a couple more questions. We'll wrap up. And I, like I said, I appreciate you doing this. It's been an amazing conversation.
It's so much fun. What a great conversation.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you're enjoying it. How did you transition after Happy Days? Because I know that's such a tough task when everyone knows you for this particular character. And I'm talking about, like, one of the biggest iconic characters in TV history, like, period. So how did you transition from the Fonz to your next chapter?
That was difficult. I sat in my office. I didn't have a plan B. I had just lived my dream times a million. And then I didn't know what to do. And then I would get scripts that were just Fonz-like. And then I couldn't get hired because people would say, he is so funny. Oh, he is a wonderful fellow. Oh, we like him so much, but he was the Fonz. Now, just before that, while I was still doing the show, I thought I was going to go from mountaintop to mountaintop. I thought I was going to beat the system because I got all this mail from all over the world, 126 countries. I got gifts in the mail. And then all of a sudden I looked down and there were grass stains on my jeans because I had slid all the way from the mountaintop into the valley.
Mm.
Now I'm not being hired. Now, two things. I was smart enough. If you don't know what to do, don't do anything.
Mm.
Mind percolate because it will come. Number two, what am I going to do? It's 8 years, 9 years from the time Happy Days ended until my next real acting gig. So I started to produce my, that's when I got the company.
Mm-hmm.
And then MacGyver came, and then Sightings came, which was the study of all things paranormal. And then we did a kid show for Disney called So Weird. Then I started directing. Now the directing didn't work out very well. I did like two or three feature films. I did two or three movies for television, one starring Scott Baio. I won the Emmy,
wow,
the daytime Emmy for directing.
It worked. But, so it worked out kind of okay.
Kind of, but I, you know what I was? I honestly, the way I see myself, I was like a lawnmower that you had to pull, mm-hmm. and it never got started. That was my directing career.
Oh, gotcha.
It was spurts and spots and stops and, you know. And then I never let go of my dream to act. And then it started to take off again. And then slowly, the Waterboy, Scream, you know, Parks and Rec, Arrested Development. And here we are at Barry, which we start filming again in August.
Thank God. I love that show. Thank you. I love that show. Yeah, because, you know, I'm in a similar spot on a way lower level than you were. When it comes to, I'm getting auditions, you know, it's basically Bowser. It's how I'm seeing it. You know, it's the same type of character. And I'm like, I don't really want to play the same character again. I want to do something different. I'm very into producing, you know, I'm developing some things. And I'm at a point where it's like, I know I could do comedy, I could do drama. I want to have my show, right? Like the Justin Hire show, whatever that is for me, my Atlanta, you know, whatever, my late night show, whatever it is, like, I want to develop that. But what you just said, which is if you don't know what to do, don't do nothing, just kind of, so that's, I know my reps are looking at me like I'm crazy right now, you know, because they're like, Justin, we send you these auditions, and I'm like, but my heart isn't in that right now, and I don't feel like my audition's gonna be that good, and I don't know if I'm gonna be happy doing that. And I'm at a point where I finally have some time to really reflect, work on the things that I want to do and see where that takes me.
You're in a very scary place because, you know, when I'm listening to you, when your audience is listening to you right now, you're very clear about what you want. And I truly believe in manifesting. If you go out into your backyard, into the street, into the countryside, and you talk to the universe about what you want, and it is without a doubt, you can make that happen. It's the way of the world. It's not woo-woo. It's not yoga. It's not it. And I'm not putting down yoga. I don't do yoga, but
I know every yoga person is like, F you, Henry. Screw him. Keep going.
It is that you are clear with the universe. Though what you put out is what you get back. I will see you on that show that you are manifesting right now. I believe it. I believe I will see Justin on that show that you want.
Absolutely.
But it's scary because you're turning stuff down. Will they be mad at me? Will they come back to me? Where is it?
Right, right. It's especially scary for my wife.
You believe in yourself.
Yeah, man. And that's a tough thing, man, when you believe in yourself and you feel like other people don't believe in you as much as you believe in yourself.
That's the way it goes. And then you start thinking, well, maybe they're right. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
Right. Maybe I'm the crazy one.
Right. But you're not.
I appreciate that.
Because when the time comes and you're really at a crossroads, and it is, you're taking care of you and your wife and your family. Mm-hmm. You make a different kind of decision, but right now you don't have to make that decision.
Right.
So you just sit and you put your feet up and you let it percolate. It's like making a great cup of coffee in your brain. Mm-hmm. And eventually the buzzer will go off and it will be ready.
Right. Right. Now I'm glad you just told me that. I mean, yeah. I want to, before we get off, I want to talk about two last things. One,
do you know how many times you just said two last things?
I know, right? That's how I keep people on for forever. But this is the last two, I promise. One.
Yes.
Your relationship with Adam Sandler, because you're correct. When you came up on Waterboy, I remember seeing that in the movie theaters, and I remember seeing you. That movie was so funny. I'm sure it did a boost for your career. Yeah. How did that come about, that role, and then your relationship, because you've done several films with Adam?
I was doing one of the worst movies ever made by human beings called Control Tower. And but I'm not kidding. It had three directors. One of them was Kiefer Sutherland, who was the star of the movie, had literally to take over directing while they were in between directors.
Oh, no.
It was horrendous. But there I was. And I got a call from my agent that Adam Sandler would like you to play the coach in The Waterboy. And I said, I would like to do that. Now, I go to the set and I think, well, I'm a football coach, I'm going to wear a baseball hat, a cap. And Adam said, no, you're going to wear a pork pie hat. I said, but you know, as the actor, I really feel like I should wear the baseball cap. They said, yeah, but Adam really thinks you should wear the pork pie hat. And at that moment, I understood that I was never going to question Adam again. Because he's in charge of every detail of the stuff that he makes, whether he's in it or not. And I think he borders right on genius.
Absolutely.
He just doesn't dress well. But my God.
Yeah, he can't get that right. Shout out to Adam Sandler, but yeah.
I mean, I adore him with all of my heart. In Click, it was one of the great compliments of all time. I got to play his dad.
Mm-hmm. Great movie.
And his dad had just passed away. So I thought that was amazing.
Yeah. And finally, Barry. I have to ask about Barry. When I first saw you in that show, and you won an Emmy for it, anyone don't know, I thought you were so funny to the point that I didn't know you were that funny. Like, I knew you were funny. I've been watching you my entire life. But I didn't know you were that. How did you get the inspiration for that character, Gene? Because what I learned about, you're not playing the funny, you know, I don't think. It's like, how did you, I don't know, like, what tips in comedy can you even just give me? And I want to know how you got this,
So there are four things so far in what you said. So number one, the combination of Bill Hader and Alec Berg partnership as writers, producers, directors, and Bill stars.
Bill is a genius too.
If you get to work with these guys or any one of them, I would run, not walk.
Gotcha.
Number two, they are very clear about their comedy. So they let me ad lib and they let me create, but they're also very clear about what they want. So in structure comes freedom. Inside their structure comes freedom. You know, it's like a great ballet dancer doing Swan Lake. Those steps were written 100 years ago. Those steps were choreographed 100 years ago. But how you do those steps, how those steps come through your body, is where your talent is separated and shines. I was written Barry Kusinow, Gene Kusinow, was written as a real hard ass, real meanie, real non-caring asshole. Mm-hmm. And I, just by the way I talked to the actors and stuff, they saw him coming out of me, and they wrote and retilted the character so it included who I was. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, I had 14 teachers from Emerson and Yale. I taught 3 or 4 master classes in my life at Northwestern, at Emerson, and at South by Southwest. And I took all of that and put it in and churned it up, and out came Gene.
Man, classic character, well-deserved Emmy win. I was rooting for you. I knew you was going to win it anyways, because when I literally saw the first season, I said, he's winning an Emmy for this, because it was, I was blown away by how amazing you were. That's it, man. I mean, I appreciate you.
Did we have a great time or what?
Man, phenomenal time, man. Thank you so much for doing this. Like I said, I created this platform, Urban Legends Podcast, to celebrate people I feel like are living legends and have made legendary moves in their career.
Let me tell you something. You're really good at this. You're really, really good at this. Now, you have to understand, I've been doing this for 45 years. I've been interviewed by a lot of people. This conversation was amazing. It was so filled with humanity. I love being here with you.
Oh, my God. Thank you very much. I'm going to take that snippet, send it to Kelly Call, and tell him to give me my late night show. So,
you know what? Do that.
I will. But, man, thank you very much. I mean, you're a blessing to me. Wish you nothing but continued success. Hopefully, we'll work together on something else down the road one day. And if not, just know that I appreciate you. I love you. I thank you for all those kind messages you've ever sent me. And, yeah, man, just thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, it is a pleasure, and I cannot wait to watch what you do next.
Nice, nice. All right, I'm out of here.
Do my best to your wife.
Will do. Peace.